Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Joel Ostro joins us now, political science professor at Benedictine University. He's joined us many times over the years. He's an expert on particularly all things Russia, but the international affairs as they affect the United States as well. Joel, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great, and it's great to have you back in, on WGN regularly, John. Welcome back.
Yeah, it's nice of you to say that.
I got to tell you, I want to echo your comment on subscribing to newspapers. I think it's a really important point, and that's a great quote you had by Senator Graham.
Yeah. Well, he's funny because he's a Republican, I think.
Yeah.
He says some of the that's a guy who does not need Donald Trump's vote to get reelected. He's always been very interesting to me. He's great fodder on the talk shows. He's very funny, but he I think, makes about as much sense as any of them of either stripe. I don't know, Steve, do you agree? Are you a fan of Lindsey Graham? Do you think that he's good for the dialogue? I do. What's your take on him, Joel?
Well, shortly after the election, oddly enough, I sent him a letter that began, "I'm the last person I would ever thought would be sending you a letter of praise." But his courage and his principle in standing up to Trump during the campaign and afterwards is really singular among elected Republicans. And I praised him strongly in that. And you know, I don't agree with most of his politics, but you sure got to admire the guy.
I'm not even sure what he's saying here, though. What is his point? He said, "Here's what I think Assad's telling Trump by flying from the base, the one that we bombed FU, and I think he's making a serious mistake." In other words, Graham is saying, don't play chicken with Donald Trump, right, or you'll lose. Isn't that the point?
I think the point is that this administration has no clear strategy. They're flying by the seat of their pants. You know, on Monday, the Secretary of State comes out with a statement that makes it look like, you know, we're okay with Assad. We'll have to find a way to work with him. You know, we're no longer looking to remove him or punish Syria. 2 days later, this happens. You know, I think they're banking on not only the inexperience of the president and the people around him, but also the fundamental lack of clear direction and objective. And it's a challenge. I don't think it's an FU. I think it's an, oh, yeah, let's see what you got.
Which is such a juvenile game to play, it seems to me. I mean, now we're sort of floating around North Korea saying the same sort of thing, tempting them. And listen, we don't have to cow to anybody. We are the United Flipping States. We are the big dog, and we wear the white hat. And I believe that and always will. I believe that today. But I don't see the point of tempting some of these dum-dums either.
Well, I now I see what you're saying. It's a little bit different. I think that what Assad is looking at is, okay, he says we're okay, we're going to go through with our objectives, and Russia clearly, that's working closely with the Assad regime, is sort of banking on, you know, exploiting, you know, the reactive and lack of focus nature of our foreign policy right now. Also understanding that we don't have really strong allies in terms of foreign policy because nobody knows what our goals or objectives are, what we're doing. There is no foreign policy where there are no foreign policy objectives.
Well, I want to ask you this, Joel. Hold on. It's 216 on WGN. If you've got a question or comment, we'll be happy to weave you in. 312-981-7200. New York Times and CNN are writing about this today, too. The New York Times headline is Tillerson on eve of Russia trip takes hard line on Syria. And CNN had this as the opening sentence. The United States will hold to account any government that commits atrocities against innocent people, Rex Tillerson said Monday, as key U.S. allies met to work out a common stance on Syria. I'm not sure what that means. We're going to hold to account, those are his words, countries that commit atrocities against innocent people. So if we see the Iranians or the North Koreans gassing their own people, are we going to do the same thing then, Joel? Is that the message here?
Or even more ominously, you know, the current regime in Moscow that puts bullet in the back of the head of any investigative journalist, journalists who are critical of Putin and the corruption and violence of his administration, imprison or murder opposition politicians, or those who would try to fund or support political groupings not aligned with Vladimir Putin. Those are atrocities against freedom, against liberty, against human rights. It's atrocities against private property, against a free press, against all the things that we are supposed to hold dear prior to, you know, the first week of November. Anyway, as a state with a clear constitution and truths that we say we hold to be self-evident, it's not clear that at least our political leaders hold those truths to be self-evident, and so the world doesn't know what we're going to do. That's fluff, that statement, and you know, no administration responds everywhere to all atrocities. It's not the correct role of any government nor ours.
Well, was it the right response for us in the case of Syria? They gassed their people. That violates every convention in the world. Were we right to launch missiles at that airfield?
It is not wrong to respond, but the question is, what is the appropriate response? An appropriate response would be much more effective if it was not just the United States launching missiles, but the United States in coordination with our allies, with NATO, with other governments, not just NATO, but, you know, Japan and China.
Okay, but say that the French and the
coordinating
British.
Coordinating with Russia.
What if they had,
much
though?
More of a power.
Well, what if it was a coordinated effort? At the end of the day, they gassed their people. Those beautiful babies died horrible deaths. The United States responded with military force. I think late last week, most people thought that was good. They felt good about this. They called our bluff, and we gave it to them. We're not going to stand by.
That's not enough. Yes, we feel good about it. But that's not the objective of foreign policy, or ought not to be the only objective in foreign policy. Our objective as the United States ought to be to effect an outcome that is advantageous, ultimately, not only to the United States, but to the principles that we hold as important. And that only happens when it's not just, okay, we feel good now, we can look at something else. It's we're doing this together, and we can go to the UN, and we can go to the Security Council, and we can work with states, including those who aren't our closest friends. But we can work with others because this is an outrageous act. And we can work with others to even pressure Russia, which, you know, seems to have failed in its obligations on the agreement about removing and eliminating serious chemical weapons. But we have no infrastructure to do that now because we have an administration that lacks really a foreign policy team. You look at the National Security Council, you look at the upper echelons of the State Department, including the Secretary of State, and positions are vacant or absent people with foreign policy expertise. We have some generals and lieutenant generals in various positions, but we don't have foreign policy expertise. And the president, you know, his top foreign policy advisor is his son-in-law, who has zero experience.
You know, everybody's been looking at that picture of the team, the 19 people that were in the room. It was reminiscent of Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and their people looking at the screen when they were watching in real time that operation that took out, now the name escapes me. And so now we have the similar version of that, Trump and his people all sitting there looking at that. Sean Spicer in the corner and Rex Tillerson was in the room. But very close to the president at the time was Jared Kushner. And I don't know how much he participated in that, but I thought, this is a young man who is into real estate. I kind of don't even want him in the room. There's only so much oxygen in there. Why is he in there? And Lord, what role is he playing? Okay, let me pause here. A lot of questions for our guest and comments, too, and that can be you as well. We have one phone line open. Joel Ostro is on the line, poli-sci prof over at Benedictine University and an expert on Russian foreign affairs. You can join us on WGN. What percentage of us think that the United States did the right thing in the case of bombing Syria's airfield? 51% back the U.S. strike on Syria. But most are concerned with our relations with Russia, according to a recent poll. That's why we reached out to Joel Ostro. He's a professor of political science at Benedictine University. This is his cup of tea. lots of calls for you, Joel. So if you don't mind, I'll just jump in and take some questions from our listeners.
Sounds good.
Let's start with Tom. You're on WGN. Hey, Tom, what can we do for you?
Hi, John. Thunder and lightning is still out here in your old neighborhood.
Whereabouts?
Western Springs.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks for the heads up on that, man.
At any rate, Professor, do you think that Nikki Haley is kind of like the canary in the mine for whatever policy is out there? She seems to be a star on the rise, and she seems to be kind of saying things at the UN that nobody else is saying in terms of being hard-nosed.
Yeah, it's interesting. Those who follow partisan politics, she's an interesting person to watch because this gives her a foreign policy credential she didn't have before. It has seemed in the first couple of months that she has taken a line that at least her boss has not publicly taken. I hadn't considered whether the canary in the coal mine idea, that she would be the one floating an idea and then see how it runs. It's possible. I don't really know enough about her background to know for sure, but it's not impossible. But I suspect that she's more of an independent voice trying to not only carve out a place for herself, but also to try and provide some direction for U.S. foreign policy. I have a sense from the little I do know about her that she's sort of the patriot who cares kind of personality. So.
Yeah, she does come across that way. It's a great question, Tom. Thanks for jumping in here. But I was thinking about this on Sunday when they all fan out to the different shows, and communication has been an issue for this administration. And I thought, are you guys all on the same page? Was there a conference call, and did somebody, maybe the Secretary of State, say, everybody reflect this? Or did the president say, here's the talking points or papers? I don't know how that goes, but you'd like to think we're speaking with one voice on this and not you try that and you try that and let's see what works best.
Maybe, but I doubt from this administration so far that it's the Secretary of State who would be putting out that message. He's the least likely. But
who should? Who would be the person, Joel?
Oh, should is a different, every administration has a different leading voice on foreign policy, right? And it's not always the Secretary of State. In the Nixon administration, it was Kissinger. It didn't matter what role Kissinger held, right? Sometimes it's the National Security Advisor. Sometimes it's someone else. But it's always someone who's got some reason to be the voice on foreign policy, right? Could it be? I doubt it would be General Mattis, the Defense Secretary. It's hard to know.
Right.
And too often you hear different voices, which is what leads us to the conclusion that this is an administration without a rudder when it comes to foreign policy.
This is Gary. You're on WGN. Jump in there, Gary. What do you want to say?
Hey, Steve.
Hey.
My name's Gary Lawson, and my uncle is Ted Lawson. He was in the Doolittle raid on Japan.
What's your question, Gary?
Well, I don't have a question. I have a statement I'd like to make. President Trump is like a loose cannon, and I think that is what we've been needing for years and years in our presidency since Kennedy. He cocked the hammer back on the Cuban Missile Crisis, and he put things back to normal. Okay, well, President Trump, he didn't just cock the hammer. He shot the gun, and he let the rest of the Middle East and the Far East and Russia know that he's a loose cannon, and I think that we got respect from that. And I think I'm gung-ho on that. I appreciate the fact that he did that. For the first time in 8 years, I'm proud to be an American, and I want to condone President Trump for doing what he did.
Thank you, Gary. I'm going to go from you to Dan. You're on WGN. Dan, you're my last call. What do you want to say?
Yeah, well, first of all, I disagree with your previous caller, because before he bombed Syria, he warned the Russians
to get out of the way.
Right, and so they made precautions, and he didn't even bomb the runways at the airport. But my main point is what Trump, one of the main themes Trump campaigned on was defeating ISIS. And I think one of the reasons he had friendly overtures for Russia and Syria was they would help in defeating ISIS. I think this whole situation puts a kink on that whole objective or a major obstacle. And I want to know what your guest's viewpoint on that is.
Interesting question. Let's wrap it up here, Joel. What's your thought about that?
Yeah, well, you know, that would be a good objective. And certainly candidate Trump was clear that that was going to be an objective. It's not quite clear how to do it. He never articulated a plan. And in office, there's been no evidence.
Well, remember, if he told us what the plan was, then everybody would know.
There's no evidence that it's a priority or that there's a consistent effort towards building. You know, we can't do it on our own. So where's the evidence that we're doing it with anyone else? You know, to the other point, you know, I don't respect a loose cannon. I you know, it kind of terrifies me. And if you're on the side of a cannon that's loose, you're at a lot of risk. So that's number one. The second point is, well, thank goodness we warned Russians who were on the ground before firing those cruise missiles, because the last thing you want is to be killing Russian soldiers if you're the United States of America right now. So
it's 2:32. Hey, Joel, I'm going to call you again probably, I don't know, over the next 4, 8 years, 2 years, however long this thing runs. But we'll be in touch.
Anytime.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Anytime. Always a pleasure.